This is a Triple J podcast.
What does it feel like to live in a doomsday cult? To think your way of life is the only one that's right. Everyone else is damned. You could be too if you don't follow the rules. Well, this week's guest knows exactly what that's like because she says the church that she was born and raised in was a cult. But she says it took her decades to realise it. I'm Dave Marchese. This is Hack's Long Listen of the Week, a chat with Bec Condello. Bec says her early life was ruled by anxiety.
I just grew up with this mortal fear of God returning to the earth at any point. And if I hadn't prayed properly this morning, I might burn in hell for all of eternity.
She says life was all planned out for her, but she didn't have much of a say in any of it. After years of loneliness and isolation, one day she had a thought.
I kind of called bullshit on the whole thing because all the doubt that I'd ever had, like, oh, if I leave, I might be wrong, or like, what if this? I was like, oh, no, actually, this is all wrong.
But leaving wasn't easy, and even when she managed to, there was a lot to process.
I had not just lost everyone I'd ever known, I'd lost my whole value system and my whole identity.
This is a really unique perspective from someone who's managed to turn her life into something completely different. So here it is, my chat with Bec Condello about her life and her new book, Can You Handle a Girl Like Me? Bec, thanks so much for joining us on Hack.
Hey Dave, thanks for having me.
It's a very interesting story. Can you talk to us a bit about your childhood, Bec, and you know, your family grew up in this Geelong Revival Centre. What was that?
Yeah, so I was born into it. My parents joined in their early 20s. My mum was only 19. It was very sort of closed off to the outside world. So anyone, even if you told me you were Christian, you were going to burn in hell because you weren't coming to our very specific church. And I just grew up with this mortal fear of God returning to the earth at any point. And if I hadn't prayed properly this morning, I might burn in hell for all of eternity. And I was just always so scared of just God seeing and knowing everything. And the pastors of the church were direct conduits to God.
Did you know much about the outside world?
Not really. I mean, I think especially for me in my family, there were certain things that were expected of the cult. But then for whatever reason, my parents just had this additional layer of control. And so I didn't grow up having a TV. I was homeschooled until I was 10. So my world was tiny.
Were you questioning with other people your age?
No way. Like that would have just been such a sin. And I would have been so scared. I mean, my parents had told me from such a young age, if I sinned, if I questioned anything, I was going to get kicked out of the church. And I didn't know, as a kid, that's a very real threat.
What was your relationship like with your parents?
It wasn't great. One major aspect of the belief system in the cult was that children were to be hit to punish them, to keep them in line, and they backed that up with scripture. The more you hit a child, essentially, the more you were kind of guaranteeing their place in heaven. Again, my parents were especially strict, and my mum was very controlling, and I grew up very afraid of my parents. I talk in my book about how my dad used to go around and shut all the windows in the house so that the neighbours wouldn't hear me screaming when he hit me. And I remember thinking, like, it always wondered me that the neighbours never heard, but then I was like, but my mum was also in the other room, and I'm not a mum now, but I can't imagine being a mum and hearing your children being hit and not having some kind of like emotional response to that. And not only that, she'd been the one primarily that was telling my dad to hit me.
What were the rules like?
So I had to pray twice a day, half an hour in the morning, half an hour at night. And especially as a girl growing up in the cult, it really was expected that I would just eventually become a young wife and mother. And so it was everything we did was really just like a means to an end, essentially. And, you know, I never imagined that I would get old. Like, I always just thought God was going to return any minute.
Did you ever imagine that you would be outside of this situation? Like you said, at 10, you started to question things. How did that progress?
I think I never fully really felt like I 100% believed it. To the point that when I started going to school, I never wanted to tell my school friends about it, you know.
Right.
But I also just didn't have any evidence that it wasn't right. And I think when you've been told something from such a young age and it's all based around fear and this all-knowing, seeing thing that you can't actually prove or disprove. So I don't know that there was like one specific point, especially in my childhood, where I was like actively questioning because I didn't even really know what to question. I knew I didn't love it, but I don't think I had the understanding to have that thought process of like, is this right or wrong? And that wasn't until I got a little bit older into my late teens that I really started to question. I was just so painfully lonely. Like everyone I'd ever gone to Sunday school with had all left. I wasn't allowed to have friends outside of the cult.
How much power did the pastors have?
They had ultimate power. I mean, they could have said anything and people would have just blindly followed it. And they did. To the point that when I ultimately did leave the cult when I was 27, my mum never spoke to me ever again and probably never will. I remember when I met my now ex-husband, I was taken aside and basically told, like, you have to marry him.
Can you tell me about how you met what became your husband?
I was kind of ready to leave. I'd decided that my parents were never going to just let me leave. So I decided to write a letter and make up a lie that I'd slept with someone. And I thought, like, if I tell them I've had sex with someone, I'm going to get kicked out of the cult for at least 2 years. That was the expulsion, you know, for sinning. And my parents can't argue with that. So I'd written my parents a letter, but I'd already booked tickets to go to another state for one or the other. We had like multiple church camps scattered across the country. So I'd already booked my ticket. So I was like, okay, I'm just going to go. And then when I come back, I'm going to give my parents a letter and then I'm going to leave. Unfortunately, there, that's where I met my ex. And he seemed kind of cool. Like he seemed a little different. He seemed kind of funny, a bit out there. He seemed a little outside the square. And I remember thinking, okay, maybe I actually don't have to leave. And so then, yeah, not long after that, we'd started dating. He had to like ask his dad and his pastor and my dad and my pastor first before anyone could even ask me what I wanted. And we hung out for like 7 weekends before we got married. I guess there was some excitement because I was excited to be getting away from my parents, but it wasn't like, yeah, I'm like super excited because I've met the love of my life.
So you didn't want to get married, really?
I knew that that's what I didn't want. And I remember when I got married, I felt this sort of almost sadness in me where I was like, you know, I remember when I picked up my wedding dress and I kind of just hung it up in my bedroom until my wedding day and I never looked at it until the day of my wedding because I just, yeah, I wasn't excited about it.
And the wedding night itself, was that like a scary experience?
Yeah, so we had never had sex or any kind of real intimacy. I think we'd like kissed quickly on the lips or something, but we'd had no time. Like we weren't allowed to be in the same house together before we were married. So everything was very moderated. Yeah, our wedding night came. I had some anxiety because I remember when I was a young teenager, I tried to use a tampon and I couldn't use a tampon. So I remember I had this anxiety that like, I just felt like I wasn't going to be able to have sex. I mean, additional to that, I mean, I didn't really know anything about sex.
Yeah.
When my mum gave me the sex talk, it was like this book that had been handed around the cult and someone had taken a Sharpie and blacked out all the penises in the book so that girls didn't see what a penis looked like. So I was just so monumentally unprepared for sex. But I felt this pressure that was like, okay, it's our wedding night. We have to sleep together. And tried to have sex and it just felt so painfully impossible. I thought, yep, I'm the problem. You know, initially I think my ex was kind of understanding about it and, you know, supportive. And ultimately we were two also young people that really didn't know what we were doing. We were also kind of relative strangers to each other. We went and stayed at his parents' house for the first few months of our marriage, which is not conducive to intimacy. So yeah, we just did not get off to a great start and we ultimately were not able to have sex for the entirety of our marriage.
And how long were you married?
10 years.
10 years.
It wasn't until I finally left him at 32 that I went to a therapist and I went to a gynecologist, found out that I had vaginismus, which is not uncommon with a lot of women. But for me, for the entirety of my 20s, I thought I was the only woman in the entire world that had this thing because we didn't have access to medical or mental health support.
What was your marriage like?
It's what you'd expect to marry someone that you just don't know. And I'm always really careful the way I talk about this because I don't want to say that, you know, my ex was entirely at fault or whatever. I just think we never should have gotten married. I think we were two entirely different human beings that were fundamentally misaligned. You know, like if I went on a few dates with him now, I'd be like, oh, no, absolutely not.
Yeah.
You know, in a perfect world, I would have actually gotten to know him and then been like, oh, no, he's not my type at all. He just had a very controlling personality. Everything I did just irritated him. I genuinely just don't think we liked each other as people. I did what I was supposed to do as a wife, cooked and I cleaned and I did all the things. And I just over the years just became more and more hollowed out and empty and lost.
How did you get to the point of deciding you were going to leave the church?
This is probably one of the worst times in my life, actually. So maybe around 26, my ex had been, he was a tradie and he'd been doing some work for pastor of a church outside of our church. Through that, my ex started to question things in the cult. So initially he comes home and he's like, I've got all these questions. I freak out because I'm like, I don't want to go to hell. Like, let's not question it. Even though I wasn't happy, I was like, I don't want to question it. But then over that year, that was actually one of the weird things that kind of bonded us for a minute, like where we kind of came together and we started really questioning things. He then took his questions to the pastor and his parents, and their response to him was just, you need to pray about it. You know, you need to pray about it. God will reveal it to you in the Bible. And because we'd had all these issues with intimacy, I had told him at some point, I had a couple of experiences when I was a kid that I felt like I'd been abused, sexually abused as a kid. But because I didn't have a lot of the language for a lot of the things I was experiencing, a lot of those memories are kind of foggy and a bit hazy. And, you know, as an adult with my adult brain, I'm like, yeah, I'm pretty sure something happened there, you know.
Yeah.
But I didn't have enough to like clearly say, yes, this is what happened. And so I think I'd told him about those experiences as like, maybe this is why I can't have sex, you know. And he had kind of taken that and just, I think that made him feel better because then he was like, oh, yes, it was definitely those things and not our miserable marriage.
Yeah.
He basically said to me, I want to take what happened to you as a kid to the pastors and kind of use that as evidence that the church is flawed. And I was like, absolutely not. I just didn't want to talk about it. And he just kept on like pushing me about telling them. And I was like, no, I don't want to do it. One day we're having a conversation and he was like, you know, he just had an argument with his parents about the cult and I think he'd been talking to the pastor. And I turned to him and I'm like, stop trying to keep everyone happy. Just do what's right. In my head, I think I'm saying, let's just tell them we're going to get the hell out of there and let's just leave. He looks at me really strangely and he's like, okay. And he leaves. And he comes back 15 minutes later and he's like, you're not going to like what I did, but I did the right thing. I'm like, what did you do? And he's like, I told them what happened to you as a kid. I had a full meltdown. Like the ground just like opened up underneath me. I felt so exposed, so betrayed, so upset. Anyway, so then the cult did their little inverted commas investigation. No one talked to me, by the way. No one ever once picked up the phone. No pastor ever came over. So they looked into it based on what my ex had said. So who knows what he even said. And so then they came back to him, to my ex, and they were like, he said he didn't do it. And my ex was like, well, they think you're lying. And he's like, actually, you know what? I think maybe you might be too. And
so how were you feeling?
It was devastating. Like it was so, so devastating. But I remember in that moment, although it was so traumatic, there was also this moment in me where I kind of called bullshit on the whole thing because I'd been told my entire life that these pastors heard directly from God and God knew everything. But I know I'm telling the truth. Mm. God knows everything. They hear from God. Something's broken here. And so in that one moment, all the doubt that I'd ever had, like, oh, if I leave, I might be wrong. Or like, what if this, I was like, oh, no, actually, this is all wrong because I know I'm telling the truth. So I just was like, okay, I'm not going back. No one ever spoke to me ever again. No one reached out to me. No one wanted to try and save me. What they did was try and pull him closer into the church because they were like, well, we can't lose both of them because they needed the numbers by this point. I had not just lost everyone I'd ever known in a second. I'd lost my whole value system and my whole identity and my whole sense of belonging, where I belonged in the world. Have you ever had a dream where you're trying to wake up from your dream while you're in the dream?
Yeah.
That's exactly what it felt like. Like it felt like super disorientating and just like I had no idea what was going on. I had no idea what was next. I had nobody to turn to. I had no skills in the outside world of like anything.
So from that moment, did you speak to your husband much at all?
Not really. Like every time he came home from his parents' house or church or whatever, he would just be so angry at me.
Did you have any conversations with your family?
No.
That was it?
Yeah. I wrote my mum a letter a couple of months later and I explained to her what had happened and I'm fairly sure she either wouldn't have read the letter or she would have just handed it straight to one of the pastors. She wouldn't have wanted to put her own soul at risk by, you know, by that point, they'd kind of basically labelled me a a harlot. You know, like I was, there were people who left the cult that, you know, with enough prayer and ministry and whatever, they could maybe work their way back in. And, but I was basically, through my ex, was told that I could never come back, which, I mean, yay, but.
Do you remember the last conversation you had with your parents?
So my dad is actually out of the cult now.
Okay.
I don't have any relationship with him. Nothing with my mum at all. And I think it's sad for multiple reasons. I think she's missing out not just on my life, but she's also missing out on her life. I don't think she will ever leave, so which means I will never speak to her ever again. And yeah, her mum actually passed away at the start of COVID. And as far as I know, she has no idea that her mum's passed away.
Have you connected with some of that extended family that your parents had cut off when they entered?
I did. Kind of relatively early on when I first left the cult. It was really nice for a little while. It was kind of through my grandma. Initially, I wrote her a letter. I knew where they lived and I'd written her a letter. And I think I was just going through so much transformation as well. You know, like I'm trying to get out of this really unhappy marriage. I'm learning and growing at such a fast pace. And then my grandma died at the start of COVID, stuck in Melbourne for 18 months of COVID. I just think, I wonder if my connection with them would be different if I connected with them now as the person I am now. I think they also didn't really know. And so I think after my grandma died, he just found it really hard being around me. So although it was really sad and devastating, he ultimately said that he didn't want to see me anymore. And then sort of gradually over that time, I just kind of got excluded from family events and things.
Sorry, Beck, that's hard.
Yeah.
That's hard.
I got really depressed. I got really down for a while. I got pretty suicidal. And then one day I realized that I wanted to give myself the chance to see if the life that I had kind of maybe imagined for myself might exist out there. And I was like, I at least just want to give myself a chance, like a shot. But I didn't even know where to start. And so by that point, I was working, had started to make some friends. Then my ex ultimately ended up leaving the church. And so then we stayed together for 5 years after that. For me, I was just like, growing and changing and evolving. I wanted to go live my life. I was like, I want to maybe go get a tattoo. I want to go try some drugs. I want to go, you know, I just wanted to go live my life. I was like, okay, like where else could we live? Like we don't actually have to live in the place that we've always lived. He just had no interest or desire in doing any of that. So as time went on, we just became more and more misaligned with each other. And it wasn't until I was turning 30 and I thought I had sleep apnea because I was waking up in the middle of the night and I couldn't breathe. And I realized I was having anxiety attacks in my sleep. I got to the point where I felt like I was strong enough in myself. I'd built enough of a life for myself. I had good community around me. Yeah, I finally left him. I went and moved out, stayed with a friend. A month later, I was in Morocco. So I just, I was like, I just want to go somewhere so far away and so different to anything I've ever known and just kind of like, make sure that the life I want for myself and that I think might be possible is actually out there. And I think maybe there was some expectation that I would have a terrible time from my ex, you know, and I'd come crawling back and be like, oh my God, I messed up. Please take me back. And I went and I had the best time. I just got back to Australia 3 weeks ago.
How many countries have you been to in the past 12 months, Beth?
23.
Wow.
Yeah. So I feel like I've more exceeded and made up for lost time.
Well,
I feel like I could start to slow down a little bit now, but I really just wanted to learn how to be on my own. Could have fun dating and go out dancing and like there was just so many things that I wanted to do. And now I feel like I've overexceeded, like I've I've overachieved.
How much stuff did you do, Beth? Did you do a lot?
Yeah. I've done all the things. I think I've ticked boxes I didn't even know were there.
It sounds like you've had an incredible time over the past few years. I wanted to ask you about maybe your relationship with your faith as well, because in the book you write, growing up in the cult left me grappling with profound questions about faith, God, and the nature of organized religion. Now, far removed from that world, I'm still continuing to learn how to make sense of it all. Where are you up to?
I'm up to this point where I don't know and I don't know that I care right now. And I don't mean that in a dismissive way. You know, if someone can prove to me that God really does exist, I'm happy for someone to prove that to me. I just don't have evidence either way. And I'm not arrogant enough that I have to know, that I have to be like, yes, God definitely exists. I don't know. I haven't seen him.
So just checking the cross you're wearing, that's one of the fashion choices.
I realised that. I'm like, this is not what I should be wearing to talk about a cult.
No, you can wear whatever you want. You can wear whatever you want. But I'm like, is that a fashion choice or is that a belief choice? No. It sounds like you've had some incredible experiences, but I imagine there have been times where it's been lonely as well.
I can't tell you the last time I actually felt lonely. I think I'm very used to now at this point being on my own. You know, I remember I used to be at parties and people would be like, oh, this is my friend Beck. She's the one I was telling you about, grew up in a cult. And all of a sudden I'd be at a party and have like six eager faces staring at me wanting to talk about my childhood trauma.
Yeah.
And so I think a lot of the time I haven't, you know, if my whole family had passed away in a car accident, I think I would have a very different response from people. But people really enjoy cults and they enjoy hearing about cults. And so I think people, and then because of how I present now, I think sometimes people struggle to bring those two things together of like someone who's very healed and has this incredible life, but also has a lot of trauma in my past.
Yeah. And I mean, to be clear, and people can hear you right now, but in person, like you're just such a warm, vivacious, like beautiful person. And I can see how some people might struggle to connect that person that you are now with all of this deep trauma that you've suffered.
I think that's the thing that frustrates me, that I've lost time. And I think for a lot of people, they can't get past the time that's been robbed from them, and they hold a lot of anger and resentment and sadness for everything that's been taken from them. So I think it really took me like intensively years of having to like reprogram my brain. Mm. Even now still, I have responses to things that I know is like my childhood trauma. You know, like even with my book coming out, my brain automatically goes to all the things that could go wrong. I'm really struggling to just enjoy this whole process. And it's really cool. Like I'm on Triple J. Like, you know, like this is something I used to listen to Hack when I was in the cult.
Wow, really?
Yeah, on the way home from work. And, you know, so this is such a weird full circle moment for me where I'm just like, wow, like all these years later and now here I am.
Can I just say that's a really crazy thing to hear. Like, was it a good experience listening to Hack?
No, it was great. I think I had like little moments of just like the outside world, you know, and I think this was definitely probably one of those components of being like, okay, like I know there's other things out there. Mm. And I was actually thinking about it this morning. I was like, huh, I wonder if I was allowed to listen to Hack or I just like listened to Hack. Like I remember I had a Hottest 100 CD and my mum saw it and she snapped it in half. Like she was so angry at me. I imagine if anyone had listened to Hack, it would have been bad. You know,
I am quite certain that that church would not have approved of Triple J Hack. What a crazy thing, Beck. I saw a piece that you wrote where you talked about the things that maybe you don't have that people might not think about, like pictures and photos, and saying, like, I don't have many pictures of me as a child or anything from when I was a teenager or anything from my 20s.
It is weird because I do think memories are kind of anchors to who we are, and it's nice to be able to go back and be like, oh yeah, I belonged there, or that was a part in my life. And I don't really have that. I have, when I met my grandma, for some bizarre reason, my mum had sent her a couple of photos of me when I was a kid, even though they didn't really have contact. Yeah. I think that was her probably feeling like she was being a good Christian or something. I'm not sure. So my grandma actually had some photos of me. And so I have some photos on my phone of three photos of me when I was like around the same age. I think I was like two or three. I have no photos after that. I have a couple of photos from my 20s. I have a huge gap in my existence that I just have no memory for. I don't even think I can really clearly picture my parents in my head.
Like, really?
Yeah. I mean, you think about someone who maybe passed away like 10, 15 years ago. If you didn't have a photo, it's really hard for you to really put a clear representation of them in your head. Ultimately is why I wrote my book, because I got divorced. I woke up one morning and I suddenly realized I had no co-rememberers in my life. And then everyone I knew had only known me for a couple of years. And so I was like, oh, I need to write all this down. I need to pull all this out of my head.
I saw that you said Western culture loves to romanticize independence. We're taught to prize self-sufficiency, to see solitude as strength, to celebrate freedom without acknowledging what it often costs. But I think true strength lies in interdependence, in having people and places that tether you to meaning. When that is gone, freedom can start to feel like drift and mobility becomes motion without memory.
I think Australians, for all our like mateship and chillness, I think we have a very low effort like community culture. Mm. I think we're not very good at really intentionally and consistently like showing up for each other. And for as bad as the cult was, it was good at community. And I think it's taken me a really long time to find belonging and community, and I've had to be super intentional about it.
Beck, what's your life like now, apart from the travels that you're doing, just the day-to-day?
My life is super curious and it's really free. And I think I got to create this life that isn't really bound by anyone else's expectations or idea. I didn't know what life was supposed to look like. So I just kind of kept in motion until I was like, yeah, I like who's looking back at me in the mirror and I like my life and I have all the things in it that make me happy. I didn't know if that was right or wrong. And I took lots of wrong ways a few times and put myself in a world of pain. Yeah, I have this life that is incredibly full. I feel really loved. I have so many anchors all around the world now. I have places where I belong. I have people who have shown up for me as family and parents in a way that my own family and parents never did or could. I feel really blessed. I feel really thankful to be here. And I really do feel like, honestly, like, I know it sounds cliche, but I feel like the best is yet to come. Like, I think you have so much freedom in life when you kind of just go, I'm going to be selfish for a minute and I'm going to do everything that I need to do to learn who I am, independent of a relationship, independent of a career. And I think that's the biggest gift you can give yourself. And I think it takes a lot of bravery, but I promise you it pays off in like dividends.
It's been a big journey for you, but I feel like you're in a position now that a lot of people could only dream of. So thank you for chatting with us. It's been such a pleasure to get to know you. The book is called Can You Handle a Girl Like Me? It's immersive. It's beautifully written. Beck Condello, thank you very much for sharing with us on Hack.
Thanks so much, Dave.
And Beck's book is out this month. She is an incredible person. You can really hear the warmth in her voice, and it's clear that there's so much good stuff ahead for her in life. If you do like this chat, remember, subscribe to this podcast. You can also go follow us on socials, on TikTok and Instagram at Triple J Hack. We always have stories dropping there. And don't forget to leave us a review. Rate this podcast. If you like what you hear, let us know, because we want to continue to bring you the stories that are interesting to you, and we'd love to get your feedback. That's all for now. I'll catch you next time.